Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 6th of April. I'm Phil Carroll.
I'm Kevin Hornsby. Welcome to the new tax year.
And I'm Charles Archer.
Yeah, absolutely.
We love a new tax year.
Love a new tax year. What did they call it this week? Was it the awful April? Was how they've been referring to the week? I don't know. It's the start of it, as Kev says, new tax year. Finally, feels like we're shaking off the last of winter as well. We hit 20 degrees on Friday, officially the hottest day of the year so far. I went down the coast, took a bit of the sea air and sunshine. It actually felt like summer's arrived. Shorts out, well, legs out, should I say, milk bottle legs out, sunglasses on, can't beat it. What have you guys been up to this week? Charles, have you been down to the beach?
Not on the beach, no, but pretty much exactly the same as you, outdoors all day, every day. Sunshine, it's lovely. And, you know, like, whatever going on in the market, it's only money. Good weather in the UK, you can't buy that.
No.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, we went to, because we had some guests over from Lebanon, and we went to a petrified forest. It's like where all of this wood has turned to stone, literally.
That reminds me of the Namib Desert where we saw those petrified.
Yeah, it was a bit like that, but that was still, if you remember, that was still wood.
Yes.
You know, because you remember you weren't supposed to take any of that because it was protected. This
you
is
can
a
always
of,
trust you're that is, one tourist who takes the part of that desert. Precious coral, don't you, when you go on the diving holidays?
It had fallen off the tree. So yeah. I didn't actually steal it from the tree. It was just lying on the ground. But no, and these were just, they were rocks, quite incredible. I mean, right in the middle of the desert. So we did that one day, and what is there to say about the markets? I mean, it has been totally dominated by geopolitical situations, hasn't it? The market almost is not worth discussing because it has been moved by things that aren't in any way fundamental in terms of the company that matters. You know, you can talk about sovereign metals raise money at, I don't know what the price was it 42 or something like that?
Yeah.
Crashed down to 35 for no apparent reason. The one company that you would have thought would have skyrocketed because everything is based in the USA is Guardian Metal Resources, and it came back down again as well. So yeah, it's been bananas, really, hasn't it?
It's been a bloodbath, hasn't it? I mean, obviously, you know, we should really call this episode of the Sunday Roast the Trump Liberation Day special. Liberation Day. I mean, who's he liberating? I don't really
the
understand.
Profits. He's liberated the profits from our portfolios.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's been a big week, as you say, Kevin, geopolitical and economic news, but Trump making headlines yet again. This time rolling out a fresh set of reciprocal tariffs aimed at levelling the playing field on trade. He's calling out China's high tariffs, some as high as 67% on American goods, and he's not holding back. There's talk of reintroducing sweeping tariffs across a range of sectors, including tech, autos and agriculture. So these new sweeping tariffs announced on Wednesday, that 10% levy on all imports with higher rates for specific countries, 20% on the EU and 34% on China, aimed at addressing trade imbalances and boosting domestic manufacturing. The UK seems to have dodged a bit of a bullet, facing a 10% tariff on its £60 billion in exports to the US, potentially nullifying any economic growth in the coming year. And global markets obviously reacted negatively, we just alluded. The stocks Europe 600 dropped 1.6% and US stock futures declined sharply, reflecting fears of a global recession. Now, Charles, I know you've unpacked quite a lot of this and you've written a fantastic article on your Substack stuff. So just talk us through, was this, did we expect to have a specific country by country rundown of taxes? Did you expect it to be reciprocal, almost a like-for-like, but actually it then be effectively half of what, like, you know, take China, he said 67, I think he slapped a 34% on them. But what do you make of it? Was it exactly, did it pan out as you anticipated?
I think it's a lot worse than what most people anticipated, hence the market reaction. That's, I mean, I think half of me thinks he just plugged it into ChatGPT and just decided this is what it's going to be.
So
And it
he's
wouldn't surprise me if
plugged
that's
it.
what he actually
No, it
did.
wasn't. He plugged it into the new
Into Grok.
Elon AIX.
Grok, yeah.
But I mean, basically, I mean, you're saying 34% on China. I mean, that's incorrect, Phil, believe it or not. I mean, this is 34% on top of the original tariffs, which was 20 or 30%, based on your perspective. Could be as high as 64%. And then you've got, 100% tariffs on EVs as well, on top of that, or solar panels. So, higher and higher. You have countries like Vietnam, for example, where the tariff is like almost 50%. So if you've moved your, or Cambodia, so if you've moved your manufacturing out of China to those countries, you're getting slapped back down. That manufacturing might now move from those countries back to China. Trump might have helped them inadvertently. But I mean, basically, it's going to make life a lot more expensive for the Americans. It's torpedoing the markets. Specific stocks that are, relying on, exports, imports are in big trouble. And my personal opinion is, unless he rows back on it, the market's going to get redder and redder. Now, in the initial panic reaction of any kind of anything like this, any kind of like big geopolitical shock, everything collapses, right? Everything across the board. And over the next few days, people will start to decide, all right, who's the winner's going to be, who's the loser's going to be. It's difficult to know at this stage who that's going to be, because we have to wait for the European Union and China and Japan and South Korea to hit back effectively, which could get quite exciting.
Do you not see, or do you not think that? Let's assume he means it and it's all going to carry on through, okay? Surely then the situation is he is preventing a lot of people doing business with the US.
Yeah.
Okay, is that what he's aiming at? Is that what he wants?
Well, I don't know what he wants. I don't think he doesn't seem to understand, the implications of what he's doing. I mean, potentially he wants to refinance US debt cheaper, and he'll do anything to make that happen. Potentially he thinks there was going to be a stock market crash anyway, so this is just collateral damage that was already going to happen. But I mean, basically, even the way the tariffs are calculated, it's not based on tariffs that are charged by other countries. It's based on the export import imbalances, which is completely unfair. I mean, a really good example is Lesotho, which is one of the poorest countries in Africa. They've just got a GDP of $2.4 billion, and it's just been hit with a 50% tariff rate. It's just completely ridiculous.
He could
Because
actually
South
bankrupt the whole country. You
well, you
could
get
actually, yeah.
well, South Africa are 30%, Namibia is 21%. So what's the issue? So Lesotho, what does it export import every year? Is diamonds. Pretty much, roughly $200 million worth of diamonds. But the US only exports around $7 million worth of goods to Lesotho. Why is that? Because, they have no money. The average person earns $1,300 a year. So even whatever Lesotho does, it can't fix the perceived problem that Trump has with it, because they literally don't have the money to correct the trade imbalance. And also, it damages the US, because this country can't, if they can't export their goods to the US, they'll send it elsewhere. And if they can't buy stuff from the US cheaply, they'll buy it from elsewhere. So there just seems to be no sense about it. But I don't know. I mean, they're same with many of the countries on the list. But I think the big one is going to be China and its reaction, because it's been hit very, very hard. What does it do next?
Yes, I was going to ask you a question about that because I've noticed that Trump had signed an executive order which terminates the de minimis trade exemption for these little imports from China and Hong Kong. I think goods valued at about $800 or less can enter the US without incurring, any duties or undergoing these extensive customs inspections. So effectively, e-commerce platforms like Shein and Temu are going to get absolutely battered because people are not going to be taking the risk of importing because they're going to get hefty into import duties on top of them.
You probably buy Temu on Temu today. I would imagine, like, it's the business model in one speech is there's no other word for it. Fucked. It's
Yes.
toast.
There's
Now, unless they
all those people in America who've been running those businesses of importing
cheap
quantities
stuff
of those
and selling
things,
them, upselling.
upselling them. They're all basically pretty much out of business, are they not?
Pretty much. I mean, small businesses, larger businesses.
I'm shocked at the shares in China today. If you looked at, I think it was PDD Holdings, which is the parent company of Temu, they only fell by 6% in the after-hours trading following that announcement. I don't know what they finished at, Charles. Maybe you can check Shein as well. But I thought they'd be down like 10-15% because, as Kev says, this could not only toast the Americans, but it could almost be the end of the China of these companies.
Yeah, well, I think it's basically it's the US is still just one customer, even if it's the largest customer, these companies will go, okay, so we just have to export to different companies, to different countries,
Country,
different places.
yeah.
And then the other thing is, the first thing that happens when a trade war starts up is countries will go, okay, so how do we get around it? So, for example, de minimis rules are still in place with the UK. You send your products from China to the UK, and then you sell them from the UK to the US. Does that add additional costs? Yes. Is it significantly cheaper than the current tariffs? Of course. So it's going to be less inflationary and less disruptive than you think. But, for example, there's a lot of countries that are going to go, okay, so you're in Vietnam and you're making like shoes for Nike, for example. Whereas the cheapest tariffed country close by that we can send our shoes to send through to the US. And how's the US going to get around that?
And it will be made in Vietnam, scrub it off the box,
Oh, 100%.
made in wherever.
Yeah, exactly,
Yeah.
exactly.
Well, I think the thing that occurred to me today, and I was actually having a text conversation with Sapan from Sovereign Metals, and I had said to him that if we didn't think World War III was coming, I think it's just begun. Because basically, World War III is going to be an economic war. Okay, because we've realized that if we have a war, we're all dead because it's nuclear. It's like the end of the world. So what is the de facto way of having World War III? It is by an economic war. And that's basically what's just happened. I mean, maybe silently China's been waging this war anyway, but now the US has woken up to that and said, right, we're retaliating.
I think
And
what will be
this is what we're going
telling,
to do.
Kev, on that will be how Trump treats Putin and Russian countries that are doing business again with Russia, like importing the gas. And as I said to, I think, Charles the other day, like Putin is starting to piss Trump off in terms of how long he's taking. He wants to get that done. And Trump, Putin is completely, he's playing Trump, he's playing him like a fiddle. He's just playing for time. He's making advances. I was saying to Charles the other day, he's just conscripted another 160,000 soldiers for his April, for his spring conscription, which is the highest it's been in 10 years. And they're just going to go to cannon fodder into Ukraine. You know what I mean? There's absolutely no doubt about it that he's not going to do a ceasefire. And I do wonder how long it is before Trump starts putting big tariffs on blockade. There'll be
But
embargoes,
there,
all sorts.
yeah, but the Russians don't need to negotiate with Trump now because they've gone and found another partner, and that other partner is China, for the gas. So sod Europe, sod the USA. We've got a big customer in China. We can also probably sell as much gas as we want to India as well, as time goes by. So they don't need to sell it to Europe or the US.
The Russian economy is really, really struggling, though.
Bad, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so on a kind of like, can they continue the war into perpetuity? Yes. Are the people getting more and more miserable? Yes. Will they do anything? I mean, it's Russia once or twice in history, but probably not.
Probably not.
I think though that we have the, well, we've had a new Cold War for it's been a Cold War for a while now, but this has kind of been, what is the purpose of all of these tariffs? I mean, basically, it's to crush China's economy. That's
Yes.
basically what it is. That's my opinion anyway. I mean, others will disagree, but when you put a tariff of that level on their largest import-export customer, it's going to crush the economy over there because it's also done at, I wouldn't say an opportune moment, but if you look at Chinese structural situation, real estate is worth up to 40% of their GDP, and that sector is in really, really big trouble. If you look at the history,
Trouble,
stories of Evergrande and whatever else, China's just turned on the money taps to try and jumpstart the economy, which, and also the other thing is, it wasn't really particularly well reported on, but a week or two ago, China has decided to mass do create much larger stockpiles of critical minerals. I know we're all kind of resource guys, but it almost seems to me like they knew something was about to happen with the US. They want to get as much metal as possible. I mean, my speculation is that China, South Korea, and Japan are going to hit back through metals. That's how they're going to do it.
Yeah.
Because it's the easiest way for them to deal with it, because the US has virtually no domestic production of lots of minerals and no way of jump-starting it quickly. So that's going to get quite
Was
fun.
going to ask you, are there any winners here? I mean, is there any potential that it could benefit UK consumers? We talked about ceramics, we talked about whiskies, we talked about American bourbon as well, bourbon. the steep barriers, and I've looked at the numbers, and there's
think
potentially
I think if
I
you
mean,
want
I
to
guess,
go out and get drunk, you're gonna be
yeah, I was
yeah.
gonna say, yeah, fill your boots. But
Well,
Charles, there are $436 billion worth of Chinese exports to the US, which are going to be looking for a new home. Like, is there going to be some bargains in the UK?
yeah, well, there will, but it's even, like, think about it. The US had just put a 25% tariff on cars and also car parts. So new cars are going to get super expensive in the US. Car companies across the world might reduce production, but at the moment they've got excess supply. So right now, I would suggest if you were looking at a new car, and obviously that's a luxury for most people, but if you are, now might be the best time to walk into a dealership with an aggressive number. You try
Yeah.
your luck now. You want to get, like, you call up, your local whiskey distillery up in Scotland that sells almost all of their whiskey to the US. You might find you can get a little discount deal, if you ask nicely. I think, yes, there's going to, obviously, on a personal finance level, there are going to be winners. And obviously, for you personally, don't, especially if it's small local businesses, don't screw them around. But at the same time, you might find there's good deals to be had.
Yeah.
On a stock market level, I mean, generally nobody wins in a trade war,
Yeah, I've just got
but
that on my notes. Basically, no one wins in a trade war. Prices go up and productivity falls, and that's pretty much sums it up, doesn't it?
Well, I think one of the big things to be aware of is the second order effect. So you might think, okay, so if I'm in America, I just won't buy a foreign car, that comes from Japan or comes from China or whatever. I'll buy an American-made car. So that's probably going to be Ford or Tesla. Ford and Tesla go, hang on, every other car has now priced 30, 40% higher. We can just up our prices by 25% and we're still cheaper. And so actually, the domestic suppliers are not cheaper and there's less of them. There's less cars
But how much
available.
of that resource has to come into America to make the car?
Well, indeed. I mean, basically, obviously a lot of it is made in the country, but how many components? Yeah, hundreds. I
Well,
mean, the
that
average.
segues nicely, though.
The critical metals for the EV cars,
Yeah.
especially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And when we looked at that going across the border 6, 7 times to Mexico, to Canada, and they're incurring charges, export and import duties every time they're going over to be made into batteries and pistons and things like that. So, but that segues nicely, Charles. I'm glad you mentioned Tesla, because is the bromance dead?
What, between Musk and Trump?
Yeah.
I mean, they were reporting that, Musk would be gone in a number of weeks, and his job at Doge would be done and he'd be gone. Is the bromance dead? I think the problem is Trump wants to surround himself with winners, right? Does Elon currently look like a winner, either financially or from a vote perspective? Probably not. Having said that, has Trump tied a lot of his personal political capital to Musk? Yes. So I'd say maybe the bromance is over, but I think it all depends, doesn't it? If the stock market rallies and roars to new highs later on in the year, God knows how that would happen, but if it did, suddenly
Yeah.
it'd be best bros again,
Yeah, I just wonder
Yeah.
because they made a big thing about it, didn't they? Saying that he effectively left the Doge, but actually the reality was that he was only ever going to do a 130-day tenure as head of the
Oh, God.
Department of Government. So the press blew it out of all proportion. But you know, there was speculation about an early departure, but they've confirmed now that Musk will remain in that position until whatever those objectives are that are going to be met.
Who
But
knows?
you
But
know, do you think it's a case of he's seen the company? You know, Tesla shares are what have lost a third of the value. All right, they've bounced back this week, but he's getting a lot of flak. There's been, you know, the German sales are down massively all over the
Chinese
world.
sales are down, all of Europe down. Yeah.
Everybody's firebombing. You know, all these bloody dealerships are getting firebombed. Like, is he under pressure? Is what I'm saying.
Or has he won? Has he finally got what he wanted? These 25% tariffs on cars coming into the US, what's
Yeah.
going to happen? Every other country is going to say cars coming from the US are going to be tariffed 25%. There's only one car company that's worth more than all the other car companies put together, and that's Tesla. So
Yeah.
it's the only company capable of raising the capital to deal with the tariffs. So has he actually, I'm not saying that Elon is this 4D chess genius, but actually, is this what he wanted all along? Just has Tesla now got,
Yeah.
because all the other legacy car companies were catching up. You now have the situation where is Tesla financially advantaged compared to everybody else? And I'd suggest the answer is definitely yes. But obviously, it'll be due damage to everyone, but the least damage to Tesla.
Yeah. Okay, well, now
I
we've
don't
got the
know though,
world to
because
rights.
you've got the reputation, the reputational damage of the sort of trademark Tesla is far, far greater than I think anybody really
Oh, the reputational damage has been awful, but at the end of the day,
understands.
it's the
Yeah.
dollar value, isn't it? If the car is cheaper in the end analysis, you'll buy that one.
Now we've put the world to rights. Let's welcome our guest this week. We are delighted to be joined by Colin Bird. Welcome back to the podcast, Colin. How's things, Colin?
Pretty good, Phil. You know, we ride in the waves of the Trump administration, but so's everybody in the world, and it you don't have to buy theater tickets anymore, and you don't have to go to the movies. So, switch on Bloomberg at six is as good as fun as you'll get. Bit scary sometimes, though.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we had Rick Rule on last week. So you're following on from a great guest, but I know you had a little listen. We shared the link to that. What do you make of Rick? I think you've known Rick for quite a long time, haven't you?
Yeah, I've known Rick for donkeys and watched his career. And you actually got a great job, because Rick can talk to talk, and Rick knows our industry, and he knows industry in general. But you bought the best out of him. And anybody who listened to carefully to Rick's investment style, it didn't sort of relate to the day trader, the retail trader, or indeed the relatively high worth trader. There's some good solid advice on sort of don't be afraid of your own border, so to speak. If you made the decision, be prepared to work to sit it out a while. That if you're in slow industries, you get slow returns on investment. If you're in speculative industries, the rate of return is very high and it can be very quick. But nonetheless, patience is a virtue. Be very careful with the people you invest in, because winners have got an habit of winning. And there was an underlying theme there, which I think was great for you to share with your platform. But equally, I must compliment you at being in between yourself, Kevin, and Charles. You bought the very best out of him, and the best is pretty good, let's face it.
Thank you for those kind words. That's really, really nice to hear. So, what did you take away from it? I mean, obviously, you're a seasoned investor, and obviously, you've been around the block. So, what was there anything that you kind of learned from it, or any insights into what, we discussed copper prices, we discussed silver, we discussed obviously the all-time highs in gold. Was there any takeaway points?
Well, I think, Rick never sort of goes overboard on anything. You've got to search for the message. But I think the message was one that you share, I share, Kevin shares, and Charles shares, is that we're about to see the change. Don't get too excited. Follow the ones who have had success, and don't expect too much too soon. But the fundamentals are beginning to come right. That's what I got from the interview. An underlying positivity, which Rick gave over. And he was telling us all not to get excited, but he was also saying he thinks our day in the sun is coming. That's what I got from the interview. Apart from those, as I mentioned earlier, those insight how to be an investor. I don't think Rick has got the slightest interest in trading. I think Rick was telling us all how to be an investor. Park a chunk of your portfolio, a portion of your portfolio, into something you haven't got to watch every day, else you'll drive yourself nuts. That's Rick's investing style. Yeah, you listen to Warren Buffett and you listen to Rick, and you probably listen to the same guy. There's the same underlying theme. You've got to like what you're buying. You've got to like the people who's running it, and you've got to be able to ride the troughs. And that was Rick. But I do think he's looking in particular at our sector having its day in the sun.
Absolutely. Very interesting. So let's talk a little bit about some of the major banks and analysts and their kind of forecasts for copper. I mean, we've obviously seen copper have a very good run of like, Goldman reiterated a long-term copper forecast of $12,000 per ton. Bank of America sort of, averaging 9.5 to 10,000, with JP Morgan, saying being a little bit, maybe a bit more cautious near term view. But what are your thoughts on those different kind of analyst pricings for copper?
It shows what a crazy world we live in. And it's sort of when you think of the world analyst. And again, I look at Charles. I sort of put my money on Charles's predictions, and a lot of those guys who get the big ticket in Wall Street, quite frankly, when we talk about analysts. Because, there's better not to maintain names, but one of the lower ones is saying, oh, I could go down to 8,000. And that's absolute nonsense. I mean, so I'm a copper bull, and so temper that a little bit. But what's happening is entirely false, Phil. The reason the price has shot up is false. because there's a great big arbitrage going on now between London Metal Exchange and Chicago. If you're expecting a 25% tariff, isn't it smart for the traders to get as much copper bought around the world as they can and park it in Chicago before the tariffs hit? Of course it is. You don't need a degree in Harvard from Harvard to work that one out. And of course, the traders, they're never slow to work anything out. And then the other side of the coin, oh, that's America stocked up now for the next 2 years. How naive is that? And then, of course, because America isn't buying, copper price in the second to third quarter is going to tank because they're loaded up with copper and they won't be buying copper. China is still the biggest user of copper. Anyway, alternative platforms and alternative trading routes are being developed. So come the third quarter, I would think they will be developed. So if I see a, just a the market going down, the copper price going down, I think it could be second off. I think 8.8 is low. 8.5 is even lower, and that's as low as I'm prepared to go. Third, if he insists on these tariffs, third quarter, fourth quarter, America, of course, will be battling to get its copper, and the rest of the world will have to have a alternative supply chains. America, China, remember, is still forecasting 5.2. So if I'm going to anywhere, I'm not going to go Goldman Sachs. I think they're still a little bit too bullish. I'm looking for steady state 10 to 10,005, and I'm telling you, at 10,000 to 10,005, some of these majors are going to make a real killing. And of course, it's a great environment for us to be in, as well as juniors, because as they make a killing, as they mine more, they need more, and it's just not there. So we talked so many times about the supply side of our business. I'm not going to bore everyone with it now. So the dynamics short term could take you down to 8.5, but I still think it'll be near 8.8, 9. Thereafter, new dynamics will emerge, which will drive the copper definitely to 10.5. And if Donald gets a bout of the worries, we won't call it anything else. If he gets a bout of the worries, then tariffs will be dropped altogether, and normalization will take the copper price to around 10, 10.5. That's my forecast, and I really stick by it. But the artificial situation where where it looked like the copper price was a rocket, and quite frankly, was short term because it was getting copper into America before tariffs arrived.
Colin, do you think that actually the plan for America to tax all of this stuff is going to backfire on them by, in just the same way as all the Russian stuff meant that they were pushed towards China, that actually that a lot of the copper supply that now goes into the US will go somewhere else instead?
There'll be so many things happening, Kevin. What I firmly believe is you've got a president, when he was a property developer, was a bully, opportunist, short term, knew how to handle the negotiating table in a very grand style, got the banks behind him in a very big way, too big to lose, too big to close down on. And he takes all of those techniques into the office of president, where of course some of those techniques really don't belong. Certainly the language doesn't. And I think it's brinkmanship. I think your tariffs are a moving target. I think that when you've got a president who's basically going to lower corporation tax, he says, he's going to lower personal tax, he says, if he can, I don't think he's at all worried about the correction in the stock market. I think he's rather playing for a weaker dollar and a weaker stock market. And then I believe, and this is sort of Machiavellian, I believe come around about June, the tariffs will be dropped or partially dropped, and you will see an all new market, a big sigh of relief, and possibly one of the longest bull runs in one of the biggest bull runs in history. That's my view, that he's playing the game. He's playing the game very aggressively with, the tariffs are sometimes obscene, sometimes ridiculous. But as he is the sort of person who mentally is saying to himself, I can impose tariffs, I can drop tariffs, I can adjust tariffs, because let's face it, he walks on water, he thinks. And so I sometimes think that people who should know better are reading far too much into what he does and what he says. No, into what he says, not what he does. And what he does, I think, is going to be pretty aggressive on April the 2nd. And then even then, probably not as aggressive for something. And we may see June mid-year. He's dropping it here, he's dropping it there. And like every good businessman, if he gives something, he wants something. And that'll be the interesting dynamic too. So what you see, I think, with Donald Trump is not necessarily what you get. But I do believe that the in terms of the grand dance, the choreography, I think the commodity sector is going to be winners, particularly copper, particularly copper. And I think from a sort of let's look after America point of view, there's going to be some real action on critical metals, lithium, copper, antimony, and a number of other metals, where basically he's not going to sit there and be in the back seat. These American Senates, Kevin, you know, Phil, as well, that they sit forever. You know, some of these Senate committees in America talking about strategic metals, rare earths, they've been sitting for 20 years, you know, 16 years, and done bugger nothing. So I think he'll galvanize them into some action. I think you'll see real action, which is aimed towards getting critical metals, the imbalance on critical metal supply and America's influence. I think that's going to be addressed quite seriously over the next couple of years. So everything what's happening, I think, is going to help our space. But we may have a short-term, as I say, a short-term dip in copper. We may have a short-term dip in a few things. But overall, Donald's going to upset the status quo, knows how to play the game. That doesn't make me a Trump supporter, by the way. I'm just saying that he's contriving for a very strong stock market, which I think will commence Septemberish, Octoberish, and will probably be one of the biggest bull markets seen in history. Now, whether the junior side gets benefit of that, Kevin, I don't know, because, you know, the way the main markets, the S&P and the Dow, the FTSE and all of those markets, the way they perform is not necessary the way the smaller caps perform. But I'm just making the forecast for the larger markets, the stock markets in general, that I'm going to see, that I'm looking for mid-year to probably September, October, a massive bull market. But in between now and then, I would not be at all surprised with a very, very sharp correction either backwards. That's my story. But I do believe in terms of the junior sector, I'm seeing the raise like Rick Rule was seeing on your program. I'm seeing the positive raise. I'm seeing the world waking up to the shortages of these materials, particularly copper. And on last night, I was watching a program about artificial intelligence and these great big computer banks, the amount of power that they need. That is frightening. That basically blew me out of my seat. It really did. I was on my second beer and I couldn't believe it. You can't rerun Bloomberg. I thought, is that true what I've just heard? That eight of the new data sections are going to consume more power than India.
Well, that's the thing, Colin. A lot of people don't realize that things like crypto and Bitcoin and also AI are so energy intensive in terms of, you know, the amount of energy that they burn just to mine one Bitcoin is scary.
Well, I'm going to make the profound statement then, coupled with normal practical things like rejigging clapped out infrastructure and power systems, getting the Indian power system started. There's just not room for this. There's just not room then for the AI, because, you know, we've talked about the supply side. It is desperate. The supply side is not bad. It is desperate. Now, that say if you like, oh, that's you being emotional, Colin. That's you telling your own story. We've all always heard Birdie. Birdie's always got a good story. But the supply situation is desperate. And it doesn't need much more to make it very, very desperate with an adverse tsunami against it. It really doesn't. So I don't know, with all what's going on, and really, you know, when we talked about Trump, we talked about short term, is it 8 or is it 12? And the analysts should know, don't know, because they've got different opinions. So their guesses are never valid. What I did see 6 months ago was there was consensus among all the analysts. What I'm seeing now, as you'd expect from tariffs and uncertainty, there's a much wider spread. So don't be surprised about that. But never... And this is always, I'm always doing a Rick now, Rick Rule. Step back, look at the demand, where it's coming from. Doesn't matter where it's coming from. We know there are multi directions for the demand, but the supply, don't care who you are, supply side, you cannot argue that it's in a good state. It is in a terrible state. And then the very, very fact that you've got to wait at best 8 years to permit, at worst 15 years, that just puts a damper on the old situation. It's serious. It's very, 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 very serious. And I read an article today. The guy who started Orion, he's done a lot. I read a long article today. He was Red Kite, and now he was the Orion founder. He's actually saying pretty much the same. We've just got to get the heads out of the sand and start spending, get an investment into the mining industry before it's all too late. Before it's all too late. Don't know if you remember 2008 kibosh, what was kibosh, the situation where the supply side was being nicely readdressed and the last 25 years was brought into balance. 2008 wrecked it, and we never ever started the engine again. So that's a bit of a dissertation, Phil, but that's how I feel about it.
Yes, very good. I think I'm sure we could talk all day about it, Colin. But I want to move on to a couple of news items this week. Obviously, back in November, we saw news that Bazant Resources had received a notice of intent to grant mining license 246 for the Hope and Gorup copper gold project in Namibia, where it holds a 70% interest. Obviously, we saw the news this week that you'd now received the environmental clearance certificate, the ECC, for Hope and Gorup too. So tell us more about this news, please, Colin.
Well, that's obviously a very, very important piece of paper in terms of Bazant. We got the provisional mining license, as you know, and of course, it was predicated on this important aspect. This important aspect, the ECC, the environmental grant, was actually integral and part of the mining license application, but obviously granted by a different ministry. And so they did their work and they're diligent, and their environment is so important, and came to the decision that they grant a license. And I know that our investors, and I do read the bulletin boards, as you know, because I think we have to, because it tempers what people are thinking about the management. And the bards were very anxious about not when we'd get it, would we ever get it? And hopefully they're satisfied that now they've got a project which has got production capability well above average. We've always talked about 6,000 to 8,000 tons of copper. And if you talk about 10,000, that's a 80 million revenue business. Nicely positioned, every single aspect of the business, the contractors, the various items of plant, the modus operandi, the scheduling of the pits, the grade of the pits. We put out the sound engineering work, which said we got a good contribution from gold. We recently reported reported, which is very significant, Phil, a full-scale test work program of the ore sorting, which showed copper of one, copper grades were higher than in actual fact, which is not surprising because the population size, it could have been lower as well, but the population size was quite small compared with the entire deposit. What was important was that it confirmed our expectations of 0.6 grams of gold, which now, in this day and age, is worth about 0.6 is about nearly $50, nearly $50 a ton. And then the silver grade at 55 and nearly 2 ounces, that's about $60 a ton. So if you look at that, it brings your copper equivalent up to just over about 2.25, 2.5. That's a healthy copper product. That's a healthy copper input, feed grade. Put that, of course, into the ore sorter, and that makes a very, very good product to take to the plant. But the biggest win there, of course, getting a little bit technical, was that we screened out a minus 19 mil to put through the ore sorter. And lo and behold, that minus 19 mil was full of chalcocite. And as we all know, probably we don't all know, but chalcocite, Phil, contains about 79% copper. And so therefore, that was a very rich component. So our fines, we can put our fines into every truck without putting them through the ore sorter. We can put some fines in. And as you can imagine, if it's just like cornflakes, it'll go through the mill. So it won't have a lot of residence time. So really, that was very successful. So all in all, Phil, I've gone on to a sort of dissertation about the mine, which you all know about, but the ECC allows that mine to be put into production. And now what we've got to do is get the final bits sorted out to make to inform the market we're ready. This is the situation, this is the structure, this is the expectations, this is how it's going to be financed. And that's what I'm working hard on now, Phil.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a great move. So, I mean, without going into too much detail, and obviously, I don't want to put any timelines on it, but what work is expected next? What is the kind of, set of events that will happen now, that license?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question because it sort of gives the suggestion, and that's what I've been reading as well on the bulletin boards from time to time, that whilst the company was waiting for the license, was sat on its backside doing nothing. So in actual fact, Phil, we expected a license and work never stopped. So to answer your question very briefly, we're ready for the off. Now the off means quite a few things. You've got to bring in a, you've, well, first of all, you've got to finally sign documents, contracting documents, because in a way, the ECC was still a, you know, the license wasn't fully granted. So the contractors got the confidence, as have we, to sign licenses. Preparedness and of contractors, they've got to do their necessary pre-start work. Final work on the plant, that too has got to be finalized. And then there's work, well, the work program on the plant is part and parcel of the project. So that will be ongoing. So to answer the question, everything starts with gusto. Everything starts with gusto. But everything was on the go anyway. And so all of those contracts were revisited. Because you've got to remember, from getting the mining license to now, we've lived in inflationary times. And so prices will be finally agreed and contracts signed.
So, Colin, you're looking at Bazan overall now. Are you fairly happy with what happened with your deal that is going to get you the Blackstone Minerals shares?
Yes, that was a good one, wasn't it? I think it represented fair value. It certainly does now. Blackstone is an aggressive group. Got a big nickel project in Vietnam. But as you know, nickel has not always been the flavor. Well, nickel is a very, very difficult subject now that the Indonesian Chinese situation is that, you know, nickel producers are all having a fair amount of problems. So I'm sure that Blackstone are happy to sort of get the MannKind project in copper and gold. So the Australians have got a good record of working in the Philippines. As you know, the documentation and the actual process of a scheme, it's a scheme, they're doing it by way of a scheme of arrangement, that completes at the end of the May. And assuming that that scheme works, I'm sure that you and others have been looking at the screens and looking at the performance of the Blackstone share. And it varies obviously day to day, but I think when I look Friday, it was worth around about $7.3 million to us at the Friday Blackstone price and the number of shares we hold. 7.3. What is that in pounds? But around about $7.3 million. It's
Five
about five and a
it's
half.
between 5 and 6 million
Yeah,
pounds, I think.
about 5.5, 6 million pounds, which is not bad for a company with a market cap of about 3.6, is it?
Yeah,
That point what five point seven in a bank and a company and a mining operation which is about to start. Charles has given his estimates of cash flows. I've neither agreed nor disagreed because I'm not allowed. But Charles is a very capable analyst and so he's given the market some ideas of what he expects. And as I say, it's not for me to agree or disagree. But if you look at a mine fully in production, obviously it's got its financing costs and all of those good things. But not a bad company to be in with a market cap of 3.7 with shall we say 5.7 coming in and a mine going to start up in the not too dis in the future.
From a point of view of the mine, how do you anticipate that this will happen? Obviously, you've got to bring some finances in. Do you
Yeah.
anticipate that that will be sort of taking money from the shareholders, as in any
Again,
dilution?
I've got to be very careful. I'm making forward statements, but when you've got a share cap of 0.024 and a market cap of 3.2, your balance sheet doesn't make good finances wanting to fall all over you. So it's not difficult to imagine the type of structure which will emerge, which allows you to finance and not necessarily through Bazan, you know, SPV into the company and that sort of structure where the company's equity is not at risk in terms of massive dilution the financing discussions have been going on for the best part of 18 months, 2 years. And so there's many aspects of the financing structure. One, of course, is always prepay. And in this day and age, if the prepayers are confident that you're going to come into production, that your plans will work, you can get prepays, which are a reasonable percentage of the annual revenue. So that of course will be integrated into any financing plan. So we're very confident in that route. The actual execution of the plan is not going to be that complicated, Kevin. You are literally talking about mini pits. You're talking about a project where the ore body, and you guys have stood on it, where the ore body actually reports to surface. That's the first thing nobody believes when we tell them, Kevin, that there's no pre-strip, that the sulfide reports to surface. So instead
Yeah,
of bringing
sure. There was
the
green
earth
bits
moving
all over the
equipment,
surface when we were there. We were
yeah,
picking them up with
exactly.
our hands.
Yeah, so instead of bringing in the earth moving equipment and doing a pre-strip, which is costly, because why are you pre-stripping? You're not getting any money, Kevin. And that's not the case here. You actually start digging and you've got your sulfides in the shovel. So it's going to be mini pits. It's going to be a series of mini pits. We'll probably run two at a time so we can balance the grade to our own benefit. But when you talk about pit, don't imagine Palabora. Don't imagine these massive mines in America. You're literally talking about a big quarry, except you're going under, you're going below surface. You're not
Yeah, this
quarrying
is
it.
not going to be the Grand Canyon, is it? Let's be honest.
No, it's not going to be Bingham Canyon. No. This is going to be two 30-ton trucks, a drill rig, and an excavator. So it really is low key. Obviously, we're not buy the equipment ourselves. We go to contractors, but you don't go to the sophisticated end of this contracting business either. The multi-million contractors who basically have got high overheads, and your first $2 or $3 a ton goes towards their overheads. You can go to the smaller contractors, of which there are many in Namibia and also South Africa and surrounding countries. So we're not we're, that that's not going to be the that's not going to be a massive planning nightmare. We've also picked the high grade areas so we can actually have 2 or 3 years of very good cash flow. We've been very careful about that. So the modus operandi is get the ore sorting plant in. That would be delivered. Delivery times there wouldn't be much later than August, September for the delivery of the ore sorter. We're going to be powering that, as we've announced before, by solar cells. So we don't have to basically capital finance the energy. We will be buying the energy, buying the power. So we don't have the CapEx. We don't have the capital. We just buy on a unit basis. And all we had to do was give guarantees on a minimum life of contract. And then we buy the power as you'd buy the power off an electricity board. That part sorted. Ore sorting sorted. Pits sorted. Transport sorted. And so when you think about it, you've got to put all the pieces in the jigsaw together and get on with mining. But we are going to make some additions to the plant in terms of probably magnetic separation to remove iron, so we make a nice concentrate. We probably introduce some surge bins so that we can get a bigger capacity. And there's zero automation. And whilst we're not going to make it an high-tech automated plant, there's a minimum level of automation required to run a good plant, and that plant is a little bit low below the minimum. You've got to remember when the bosses go and you've only got a half a dozen people on the night shift, it's important that you're able to tell, recoveries are dropping, and so you've got more reagent, that sort of thing. So if it's controlled automatically, it can really, really help you from a concentrate grade point of view and also from a productivity point of view. So we're going to do a little bit of investment on that plant too. So we're ready, Phil. Been ready for actually, we've been ready for the last 6, 8 months. So everything's in position. The ECC has been obviously a very, very, very important piece of paper, which I don't want to undermine its importance. And we always expected it because we do the right things. We work environmentally well, and our consultants are extremely good. And the government are very diligent, and so that makes for a good combination of assessment and implementation.
I mean, does it feel like the London buses, Colin? I mean, you wait days for one and then two come at once, hot on the heels of the Hope and Gorb environmental clearance certificate. We've also seen this week African Pioneer receive approval for the Ongombo project license in Namibia too. So just give us a bit of color on that news, please.
Well, again, we've had a mining license for some time. This is an interesting project on Gombo. It's the other end of the Matchless Copper Belt. It's some 20 kilometers from town centre. You don't get too many mines 20 kilometers from mines from main city, capital city centre, which is 10 minutes off a tarred road from the
Yeah,
airport.
I've actually been on
Yeah.
that road and driven past that. You see the signs and everything, don't you, from the Windhoek Airport?
That's correct. That's correct. And so the ECC is the final piece of document that we're required, and as you say, fully licensed. What's not known, I don't think, by the market in the AIM market there is, but we've got 293,000 tons of contained copper. So in actual fact, that's bigger than Lewensobi in Zambia. And the gold grades up at the top end, when I say the top end window, are the same, if not better, than Open Gorup down at the southern end of the Matchless Copper Belt. And the copper grades, obviously, it's about the same. We've got a year's open pit, mini open pit, whilst we start the plant. And then thereafter, we will have a fairly flatly dipping. We will have an underground operation, which we've got decent widths of reef, where it's a bit more narrow. The grade is obviously a bit higher. It's relatively flat in most of the take. And so therefore will lend itself to scraper mining and selective mining. In certain areas, it's possibly you've got dips where you could mechanize it. And in other areas, more limited, you've got areas where you could take use of gravity and you can drop quite wide bodies. And when you blast them, they drop to a central point. So it's not a difficult ore body to encounter. We've got a year pit, which we can enter the ore body via the pit. And our preference there is to build a plant. We've been having these podcasts for some long time, Kevin, Phil. And I've been the pundit of small mines, going on and on about small mines, the day of the small mine. I mean, we made a slogan, the day of small mine is back.
You
But
need
you
a
know,
cap. You need a red cap with that on, like Trump, like Make America Great. We need to get like, the day of the small miner is back or something like that.
Yes, exactly. But we're looking into it. We've always looked into it scientifically. But what really kills small mines, or has always killed small mines in the past, is you can't have half a mine manager. You can't have half a plant metallurgist. So they carry a burden of fixed cost. But knowing that there's no alternative supply, I'm convinced that our model is the right model. And I'm looking around the world at various places where it's been done. And the Chinese are particularly good at building plant and building plant ch cheaply. And you might be surprised to find out that China is also very good at supplying plant and supplying cheap plant, which is both cheap and effective. And so we're doing a study, and actually, the tiers of 3,000, 5,000, 7,000, 10,000 of how the capex compared to the op cost, compared to the relationship between variable and fixed. And we're actually finding tiers of production in what we're looking for, putting an old load of science into it. And Ungombo fits from a science point of view, a mine which produces about 7,000 tons of copper per year, and the fixed costs are very acceptable, and it's just in the range where we want to be. But instead of talking about a $25 million Western type plant, you start talking about the Chinese plant, you're actually down to a quarter of the cost and the time to build, half the time to build. So, and we're not allowed to make too many forecasts on these podcasts, but I can tell you, Ungombo, with its position, really lends itself to a nice small mine which can sustain the sort of level I'm talking about, 7,000 tons of copper for a good long time. And remember, Phil, remember, 7,000 tons of copper is a 70 million revenue business. We're not talking peanuts. We're not talking First Quantum's Panama either. But we're talking about something which is sustainable in a very good country, in a very mining supportive country, stable business, close to the capital city that can actually have a sustainable life for a long time. Notwithstanding that, there's quite a bit of artisanal mining activity in the area, which of course would need enough of the copper. And what we're talking about here, gents, is a 91% recovery with the 28% copper grade and a very clean concentrate. And then you've thrown in there probably 6 to 7 grams of gold with some silver. Very nice concentrate, gents. Very nice concentrate. So you may not have a lot of noise from me about African Pioneer and its Ungombo project, but now it's ready, well placed, off. And we've only just of late received a lot more interest than we did, which is a reflection of copper expectations. But the interest now on this project is quite high. And I do believe that fully permitted, both from a mining license point of view and a environmental point of view, it's a very marketable project which should receive both financing offers for offtake and financing offers to assist a build, be it debt or equity or a combination of both. So feeling very good about it, Phil.
So, I mean, I was just looking at the JORC update that you put out in, I think it was in 2023. There was a significant increase in resources. They indicated it was sitting around 5.7 million tons at like 1.1% copper equivalent, about 53,000 tons of copper, 42,000 ounces of gold, and 800,000 ounces of silver. And then there was obviously the inferred underground resources approximately 23 million tons at 1.1%, with 180,000 ounces of gold and 4.3 million ounces of silver. So it is a significant resource that, you know, when you look at the size and also the increase. But what are the plans? Are the plans there going to be start moving earth, or are you going to maybe potentially increase the JORC there as well? You know, how do you build the asset now?
Well, I don't think there's a lot of sense in building the JORC. We are where we are. I don't think that the ore body, you know what often happens in our business, you know, you get people like me saying we want 15,000 tons a year of copper. And, you know, it's a daft way to start, Phil, and it's a mistake. And this is where the shareholders really get often have a bad experience. The ore body talks to you, you know, its width, its distribution, its strike, its attitude, you know, is it steeply dipping? Does it plunge? Does it lend itself to gravity methods? Can you mechanize it? If you mechanize it, what's your level of dilution? Because you can't fit machines into a meter and a half or 2 meters. All of those questions have to be plugged into your scenario. And plug those questions in. And we, you know, back to my 10 minutes ago when I was talking about the relationship between CapEx, fixed cost, variable cost, and all of those good copper price and all of those good things. We've really optimized out at 7,000 tons for Ongombo. And that's where it's going to stay. So what's the good when you reckon you've got 290,000 tons of copper? What's the good looking for more than seven? What's good looking for more when you know it's going to be around for a long time? We will conduct exploration in the area. And obviously, if that exploration does grow, it's thicker and lends itself to a bigger operation, I've no doubt in my mind that we will enlarge the throughput. But as we stand now, we've got a neat little operation. We know that we can build that plant, $7,000 or $8,000. We know we can get into production with a contractor. We know within a year, year and a half, we can go the eggs that open pit, and we've got our entries into the ore body. So we've got a manageable plan, manageable for our size. Don't need to go set our new mining teams. And it basically fits the bill that we're talking about. Small mining. Trouble is, Phil, you know, it will suit you, suit Kevin, suit me, and suit our shareholders immensely. But it does raise a bit of a drop in the ocean when you think about the looming copper demand. You need some Panamas, 400,000 tons a year of copper, you know, and you need a lot of 7,000 tons a year to equal 400,000 tons. So what we're doing is certainly going to be very valuable because it is some copper. If we can extend it like we can, you know, that Maxus belt is a huge system. We're pretty sure we can. We may be developing a much bigger animal, which is more suitable for the bigger market. But as we stand, get into production, don't keep doing those placings. I mean, the shareholders are fed up of those placings where you're raising £200,000, £300,000, £400,000. They're fed up. We're fed up. We're fed up. You know, collectively, we're all fed up. But, you know, I think, as I've said in the Rick Rule program that you put on the other day, Rick sees the sun coming on our sector. And I don't see how it can't come on our sector, Phil, because, you know, you're Goldman Sachs. You read the results, distributions to shareholders, elevated dividends. Then you get to the back page and you see that the resource, the inventory of copper is depleting. So they'll be bringing that to attention. Oh, the earnings aren't sustainable. And, you know, projects like ours, where we've got a startup mine, which is cash lucrative, does very well, but is adjoined to a major mining system where we can get a major exploration environment where we can get in there and do some meaningful exploration, is a pretty good position to be in, Phil. And that's where most of our projects, and it was by design. We've always gone where the majors have been before. So you inherit large data banks, which create yourself at a cost $20, $25, $30 million. So it's by design. Often the wrong decisions made for the wrong reasons. You know, I'm not going to name any particular company in particular, Phil, but sometimes they say, we're out of here. And when we're out of here, by Jove, they come in with the trumpets blaring on the shining white chargers and they go out even faster. And it's often not a technical reflection. It's we're out of here.
Yeah, we just don't want to do it anymore in this particular country because we've decided we're not going to do it. Tell me, Colin, what is the gold contribution and the silver contribution in Ongombo? It seems like it could be quite significant.
Yeah, 6 or 7 grams. Point 6.7 grams, which is.
I was going to say 6 or 7 grams.
Like seven gold grams. Mine. We've got a gold mine. We've got a gold mine, not a copper mine. You're absolutely right. But you've got to put this all in perspective. Over the period we've been talking, and I've been coming on your podcast, the value of these byproducts, silver and gold, have basically risen dramatically. And so, in the Eddie prices you've got now for gold and silver, they in actual fact are worth more than the copper combined. So
yeah, you're approaching $60 a ton for 0.6 grams. I just did the calculations a minute ago. Yeah. How many grams of silver are you talking about?
Well, you've seen on a different part of the copper belt, it can go as high as 2 ounces. But I want to be very, very frugal here and say half an ounce. So you're talking about $15 probably.
Yeah, well, $17 at the minute, yeah, because it was $35. Yeah, so you're getting up towards $75 a ton of byproduct.
But byproducts, which is about 0.8% copper, you know, in a very quick calculation, 0.8% copper. Yeah. So if you're talking about 1.1, 1.2, you're actually talking about 2% copper.
Yeah, you're getting close to 2% copper, aren't you? 1.85 copper as a copper equivalent.
What you probably don't realise, Kevin, is a few years ago, you wouldn't have been paid out for those precious metals. They were fairly naughty and wouldn't pay for them. Now they just love a concentrate with base metals in. So what happens is they knock a gram off and pay you 94% for the remainder.
And you're going to get the goal for this is to get 7,000 tons of contained copper. And that obviously includes the gold and the silver, or that would be on top?
No, that contained copper in concentrate. And then you'd have byproduct contributions. By the way, I don't want the audience to be misled. We did point about 0.6, and then I've just made a statement that knock a gram off, and one could say, oh, that's it gone then. No, that's in concentrate. It'll be reported at about 0.6, 0.7 grams, the copper will.
No, you mean in the concentrate, it will be 6 or 7 grams, you mean?
Yes, that's right. I didn't want to confuse the listeners, because remember, we talked about in raw 0.6, 0.7, and then I've just come out with a statement that the purchasers of the concentrate knock a gram off. So unless you were sort of au fait with how it all works, that had been well, they don't get paid for the gold. So I've just corrected that.
Okay, no problems. So African Pioneer, as it stands, now we've got the potential to become a producer, obviously in Namibia, in Gombo. We've, as Phil said, we've driven past this place. We know where it is. It's very close to Windhoek. What is happening in Zambia then, in terms of these licenses and obviously with First Quantum? It looks like First Quantum actually might be coming out of the abyss in Panama. I don't think it's going to be quick. As you heard on the interview with Rick, he doesn't think it's going to be quick either. But it looks like it could actually come to fruition. Are you still keen that, you know, First Quantum is going to move forward with those licenses, or is something else likely to happen?
Well, first of all, on the comment that's coming out, there's some news today that First Quantum have dropped the arbitration. That was a condition of government to enter into this discussion, so that's very favourable. But Rick and I would be basically reading off the same page. In fact, a lot of things Rick said I would totally endorse. And that mine's in rainforest-type situations, in very, very difficult. It's not in an arid desert like, you know, you park the Boeings. And so deterioration of the plant will have been quite serious. And so First Quantum will have a year to 18 months to get that plant fully functional. I do think they've got concentrate on the ground that can sell, and so that won't be a quick fix. But in the grand scheme of things, First Quantum and us have been very good partners, and there's a good personal relationship with the company. And there are quite a few other companies now interested in our Western Foreland positions. And so from that point of view, it would be wrong in this podcast to make any projections. But as you know, African Pioneer have got a project very well positioned in the Western Foreland thrust and fold belt. You shouldn't forget that you can't use the Western Foreland in one breath and ignore the Western Foreland ignore the thrust and fold belt. They run more or less in tandem and in parallel. And the thrust and fold belt is very well named, because that's just what it does. It's all over the bloody place. But all over the place is good, because it means there's a lot of action. Fluids have been allowed pathways you've created entrapments for fluids in ancient times. And so don't get totally carried away with Western Foreland. Just put the two together, Western Foreland and Thrust and Fold Belt, and we're in that vicinity. So very valuable properties. How we pan out in the short to mid-term is in debate.
Yeah, well, that was my next question. Do you think something's going to happen on that within this 2025? But you don't have to answer that because we don't like timelines.
I've been very heavily criticised for giving timelines, Kevin, and I've very willingly given them. And then I've been chastised very seriously, both bulletin boards and the regulators, for giving timelines. So it's better I don't give them.
Yeah, yeah. So effectively, African Pioneer now has a mine with a license, with everything ready to go, with 290,000 tons of contained copper with gold and silver credits.
That's correct.
Now, if you put that asset in Australia and said, here you go, it's all ready to go, how much is it worth?
That's one way of getting me to say what I shouldn't say.
Don't answer it, Colin. We can wrap up at this point.
No, let me just say that when I first started out in this business, I produced a nice little histogram. And on the left-hand side, the assumption was a bit sort of silly, I suppose, in a way. But it was a project which had been full feasibility studied and was ready for go. And then on the bottom was that side of the left-hand side was dollars. Then on the bottom was a set of countries, and it was gold. And so valuation Zimbabwe was, I think, $10. The valuation Australia was $70. And Nevada was probably $90. So if you shift them about, you actually, the big player is perception. And you're absolutely right, Kevin. I don't mind repeating one statement I made, and that's the Mankind project, which is down in the Philippines. You know, that if that was in Nevada, it would have been snapped up overnight for a fortune, and would have been in one of the best sales in the last 20 years. It's a brilliant project. So if you now, and again, there's another factor here, gents, is that, copper is flying. Copper companies are flying in Australia because the Australians are convinced that a sustainable $11,000 per ton of copper is both sustainable and therefore will be the new assessment price for new projects, which is good. Here in the UK and in the AIM market, the retail is not convinced. The retail sector is not convinced with the copper story. And I'm very sorry to say that copper story in the retail sector in the UK is viewed, copper fortunes are related to the electric car industry. And if the UK retail market is saying, well, that's stalling and stalling badly, they are so right. But they must look at every other driver of copper. As I've said, infrastructure, the data bank.
We need copper. It's as simple as that.
Emerging nations. The UK thinking is lagging both Canada stock market and to a greater degree, the Australian market. So this is why, gentlemen, whenever I get the opportunity, I do take it to go on about the fundamentals of copper, because in the UK, we just do not seem to believe the story. We just do not accept. And when we see the downturn, we tend to pan the AIM companies who are heavily involved in copper. I think you've got to look, I really do think the retail sector and the commentators like yourselves have got to look through. I've got to look through the short-term Donald Trumps and tariffs and just look at an old big world, which is developing. And I think Robert Freeland makes the classic remark. If you believe in Armageddon, buy gold. If you believe in a bright new future, buy copper. And Kevin's going to say before I'll take the words out of his mouth, if we look at the gold price then, Colin, we're in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a worry, isn't it, when you look at that?
Yeah, I don't think so, really.
No, it's great to hear your musings again. Obviously, Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of African Pioneer, we thank you very much for appearing on the podcast again.
It's my pleasure, and it always is. Upwards and onwards. Thank you very much, gents.
Cheers, Colin.
Cheers. Thanks,
Colin.
So it's always good to have Colin on. What do you make of the license news, Charles?
Yeah, I mean, for both African Pioneer and Bazant, these are really, really important licenses. It's very, very exciting. I mean, Bazant in particular, I mean, I know gold and copper are off its highs now, but I plugged in the updated numbers. And the free cash flow was looking, kind of ridiculous, like $40 million plus compared to kind of $30 million only a few months ago.
Yeah, that's per annum, isn't it?
Yes, per annum. And that's only on the open pit as well. It doesn't even include the additional extras. Obviously, we have to get finance and you have to build the mine and things have to go right and a few assumptions plugged into those numbers. But overall, when you look at the market capitalization of Bazant in particular, especially when you consider that the ASX shares that they hold, which control Minkayan, which just came out with that wonderful mineralization, are worth more than its current market capitalization, it's kind of hard to look a gift horse in the mouth, essentially. Yeah, so I'm positive on both of them. I think from these levels, they're going to do pretty well, or even very well. And then it's just a case of Colin acquiring financing
Yeah.
to build both of those mines.
Yeah. So Namibia, really Namibia being sort of the focal point, obviously, of this week's news on Gombo and Hope and Gorup. How do you see the two projects kind of potentially working together?
Well, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, basically, you might find that the kind of outfit that would want to finance one would want to finance the other, which would make a lot of sense. And they're relatively simple projects as well. Colin's not building the moon here. It's crush, it's blast crush, do a little bit of sorting, then send to a processing plant.
I think there is a slight differential, as in 290,000 tons of contained copper at Mbongo, currently 190,000 tons at Hope and Gorup, with I think it's around 40,000 tons in the first open pit. But at the end of the day, this is like a dotted, and I think it's just going to be several open pits all the way along the strike. And I don't think they've found anywhere near the amount of copper that is actually in existence at Hope and Gorup. So I think it's shovel ready at Hope and Gorup, whereas Ongombo needs a bit more work. And I think Colin, I don't know whether he's going to take that work on because it's effectively an open pit and then underground, whereas Hope and Gorup is not that way. So we'll see. We'll see. But either way, if you look at the price of that type of asset in Africa, it's been going for $20-30 million at least, as an asset. So with a license. So if that's the case, when we've got a market capitalization of £4 million for Bazant and £2 million for African Pioneer, then something's amiss. And that's not their only assets. So yeah, let's see how it all plays out. Finance is going to be interesting, but I don't think there's I think it's less than $10 million required for the Bazant thing. And I've had conversations even a year ago when we were there and they were talking about the potential to get an offtake agreement, which would allow them to finance a good proportion of that. So we'll have to wait and see, watch this space. But if you can imagine an offtake agreement coming and they had the money from some of the money from Blackstone and they could actually finance the thing themselves, that $40 million, or I think it was actually $48 million in free cash flow. Can you imagine what's it worth?
A lot, yeah.
5 years with a bit of exploration drilling, and then it could be another 5 years, another 5 years, another 5 years. Could be 20-year mine life with, let's say, $30 million free cash flow. How much is that worth?
More than today's market cap by a substantial amount.
It's got to be worth five times that 30 million if they drill and it's extending the amount of copper there. So the numbers could be ginormous. Assuming they're not ginormous, and even just on a quick sale, it could be sold for, I think, 5 to 6 times what the current market cap is.
Okay, so let's have a look at some of the movers and shakers of the week. The best performer I've got for the last week is Cap AI. Cap AI, CPAI is the ticker. They're up some 63%. I think this is Duke Mount reborn, isn't it?
It was what Duke Mount was. What was the price by the time it finished?
It's finished the week at point or around the 0.335 mark.
Yeah. So it's about the price I got out, if you remember, in Duke Mount, because I had a huge position in Duke Mount a number of years ago.
Yeah, well, they had an
So
announcement, didn't they, on 1st of April? I was a bit wary of April Fool's Day, and I think that's probably why apparently Trump held off the Liberation Day from that. They say he moved it from the 1st of April to the 2nd.
So now the second is April Fool's Day instead.
Exactly. They genuinely did a
Oh
red
no,
report
that's,
saying
come
that's
on, come
brilliant.
on. Having
No.
done it on the first in the morning, right? Come on. And then at 1 o'clock come out and said
It just
April
rode
Fool's.
back.
That would have been, yeah, I would have, the respect the world would have had for him, that would have been the best
I
April Fool
genuinely
ever.
was reading it today, and it said that genuinely they said that he held off doing it on the
Yeah.
first because of everybody thought he would be a great fool. And but yeah, no, they had an announcement, Cap.AI, that this Professor Ranjan Narg joined the
Yeah.
board, and everyone's been bigging it up. So yeah, so let's see what he does. I mean,
I think it could be really, really, really exciting. I would also, caveat to people that think, go up 1,000%, and it could keep going, that plenty of small cap companies announce kind of very famous people to the board or to leave the company, and it just doesn't quite go anywhere. So just be careful over the long term.
There's a thing that came out there as well from the Fed, which I think points to what we said at the beginning as well, which is basically saying the Fed looks to cut rates 5 times now in 2025
Ooh,
to
okay.
shore up economy amid tariff storm. That was Citi that quoted this. They were lucky if they were going to cut it once or twice before all these tariffs. So that's a major sea change in what we see.
Sure, that's not an April. That sounds like an April Fool's to me.
No, this was on the 3rd of April, and the reason why you can see maybe the dollar falling in value now is because everybody thinks that the interest rates are going to be falling, so therefore the dollar's not as attractive to hold in that situation. So yeah, let's see.
Okay, anything, Charles, on the radar for you? Any standout RNSs this week?
I've been paying attention to the macro rather than the micro at the moment. Mostly it's Trump kind of decimating things. Not
Power
particularly.
Metals had an update on the uranium joint venture at Drake Lake Silas property on Monday.
Well, I think Power Metal, I mean, its share price dropped again today. The Trump effect is down 10, it's around 13p. So now there's tremendous value in there, but there has been for the past little few months or so. But again, it's catalyst. It's get the uranium drilling going, and you might get a lot more interest. Let's hope so. Crossing
Yeah,
fingers.
I think the standout RNSs, and it's not just because Colin appeared on this, but the standout RNSs were African Pioneer and Zen for me,
I agree.
without a shadow of a doubt. These are game changers for these companies.
Yeah.
When you've got such a small market cap and you have something now that says, boom, you own this and it is fully permitted and fully licensed, then you've got something of great value all of a
Yeah,
sudden.
absolutely.
And
And then,
that's what's actually happened.
yeah.
The one thing that shocked me was that Guardian Metal Resources didn't keep going, to be honest, because it's the one company that sits in Nevada, isn't going to be affected by these tariffs in any way other than probably a very positive way. Because can you see 100% plus tariffs on tungsten coming in, or just an outright ban of tungsten?
Well, from China, South Korea, and Japan, who are all working together. Yeah, I mean, I can see that happening. Whether they do it,
So
I don't know. But yeah, danger.
this happens, the world tungsten price is going to go through the roof, like the antimony has done just the same thing.
Yeah.
And what's that going to do? It's just going to make the economics of Guardian Metal Resources, it's just going to make the economics even better. And yeah, let's see if a grant appears, because the whole point of this thing is now that Trump has put himself in a difficult position. He has to now license and push forward the critical minerals in the US as quickly as physically possible. I
Agreed.
mean,
It's
he doesn't have a choice, so
the
it's a case of here's as much money as you can have, go and do it, because we need this metal. Whether that be, the metal, the mine in where was it? It was in Phoenix 29 years and it's still been permitting.
resolution line.
Yeah, you've got Guardian Metal Resources, and I'm sure there's a number of others as well, but all of these have got to be progressed.
I mean, no, I was going to say the other pinch point is artificial intelligence, because the Magnificent Seven, which is the value underpinning the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ, they rely on two companies outside of the US. One is ASML, which designs and manufactures the lithography machines, which actually used to make the microchips. And the second is TSMC in Taiwan, which builds the microchips. And so if you have a situation where, because the US has said, fine, we won't put tariffs on semiconductors out of Taiwan, but 34% on everything else. If Taiwan decides, you know what, we're just not going to send anything to the US anymore. Or alternatively, the Netherlands goes, do you know what, we're just not going to let lithography machines be used for like US microchips, then the Magnificent Seven are going to be in big, big trouble.
Yeah, absolutely.
So AI as well as mining, those are the two pinch points
Yeah, and
for
then you've
America.
got, we saw the news this week that electric guitar had come back to market, trading or restoration of trading in the ordinary shares on AIM's expected. It took place on the 2nd of April this week, so it's good to see them come back. Obviously, a lot, much larger number of shares outstanding. It's like 1.2 billion shares outstanding, so there's quite a lot of dilution there. But what, I mean, what are the chances of doing things? I don't really know what the direction is, to be
It's a
honest.
SPAC now, so I mean, basically, it's just an empty shell. It's
Yeah, it was
got about a
valued at
one.
like £200,000 when it came back to market, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was £350,000 was invested, and that's why all the shares were. But that was at 0.034 pence. So there's just under 1.5 billion shares, I think now. And yeah, it's valued at about 600,000 quid, I think, as a SPAC. Totally empty, and they are looking to put something in it, so then we'll see whether it has any value. I mean, ultimately, if they put a reasonable sized business in it at 30, 40, £50 million business inside the SPAC, then it could do quite well. You could get 1, 2 pence out of the share. It's just a case of seeing how it goes, and it has risen this week since it went onto the market, so we'll see. Again, some people like these SPACs because you can actually do extremely well out of them, and there's nothing in them. And the downside risk is not that great because all those 1.2 billion shares that were issued are highly unlikely to be sold because they were from the people who owned most of the shares previously as well.
Yeah.
So
Okay.
could get tight, and certainly I think £1 million valuation wouldn't be out the question, which I think would be like somewhere in the region of 0.8p, sorry, 0.00, 0.08 pence.
What about Jubilee News? That they had an announcement on Thursday basically saying that they'd executed a transaction on that large waste project. Well, they sold 10 million tons, or an agreement to sell 10 million tons of the estimated 260 million of material to a selected multinational metals company. What do we make of that news?
It was great news, only it was announced the day that Trump destroyed the market, the day after
Couldn't have been
Trump
announced on
destroyed
a
the market.
Wednesday.
So it's gone a missing. But it was great news. It was like 6.5 million quid for a 4% section of that thing. So what does that make the whole thing worth if that's what they can sell 4% of the overall thing for 6.5 million?
Well, we
It
spent.
makes it. It makes it worth twice the market cap of Jubilee Metals as it is.
Well, we spoke to Leon a few days ago, obviously, after the results, and he was implying on the podcast that there's news to come, more news to come on that project, isn't there? So we shall wait and see what that is over the next couple of weeks. But hopefully, this is the first stage, and we get to realize some serious value from it, and it re-rates the share price. I mean, and this is what I thought. For 2025 is going to be what does it for Jubilee, because it only takes one contract signed and then it should just shoot back up. So let's cross our fingers.
Yeah, it
Yeah,
would be this, and also the
Zambia
scale
coming
in
back
of
on.
production of copper in Rowan and Sable, and yeah, then it's going
Oh,
to be looking very attractive.
I've got a pub quiz question for you. All of this Trump nonsense, did you miss the IPO slash RTO today?
Yes.
No,
You
is
did.
that was that I saw one of them come to market. I put it in the RNS hot list, which was Don't Tell Me.
Go
It
on.
was the one I had
You'd be
was.
cheating in the pub quiz, I'm
No, I'm not
afraid.
cheating. Was it
Looking at the
Switch?
list.
Was it Switch or someone like that, or something like
Yeah,
this?
yeah, yeah, yeah. Previously
Yeah.
One Aero. But yeah,
Oh, was it
Switch
Wonero?
Metals.
Was it?
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. So £2 million fundraise.
Switch Metals. Yeah.
Yeah, Côte d'Ivoire,
I looked at
going
it, saw Côte d'Ivoire, and then
expanding.
just turned the page, to be honest.
Look, it's. I mean, I think the management good. I think the project's good. I think it could be an interesting one. This Trump thing means that it's coming in. It'll probably just get hammered just because just the way the markets are. But I think good. You know, it could be worth a decent time. Definitely worth having a look at. I think particularly because it's focusing on tantalum, right? And these kind of like these metals and these minerals, which are like not like headline ones like copper or iron ore. Things like tungsten and titanium and all the Ts and tantalum, they're kind of rising quite sharply, and you quite the demand for them is going to be quite high, and you want ex-China sources. So I think you could have a good geopolitical story behind it. But I don't know. I just think it's always nice to see an IPO in a market where we just aren't getting many of them. But hopefully it does well.
That rise in the tantalum price should actually start to also help the trading arm of Ethereum as well, which we visited when we were
They
in Rwanda.
work with tan with coltan as well, which is
Coltan
tantalum.
and tantalum. So
Yeah.
there's a good chance they're going to start producing some reasonable amount of revenues from that, which really should take the pressure off the requirement for funding. So
Well, this is the
we'll
thing,
see
right?
what happens with that.
Well, I mean, we've spoken a lot about funding this year and last year, simply because of the way the markets are, the raising markets are. But you need to stay listed in London and keep the lights on. Roughly around 500 grand a year, I would say, in between like management fees, salaries, and broker fees and listing fees and whatever else. So once you get to that point where you are making 500,000 a year in revenue, it really does take the pressure off massively. It really does. And generally what it means is you have a higher share price and a bigger market cap, so that when you do raise money, it's with a lot less dilution as well. So a lot of companies you're seeing with a lot of small cap companies, whether it's Power Metal or Ethereum. Or lots and lots of businesses that are under sort of 20, 30 million market cap. They're looking for ways to generate the revenue so they don't have to raise money for just for working capital. And it's actually in a bear market, you're learning who's good at doing that, which is quite fun.
And thinking about that, just from even we didn't mention it when we were speaking with Colin, but what Colin Bird has started to do an extract, which is buy the piles of ore in extract and then pass them on. I'm looking forward to seeing how profitable that is for him, but I think it probably will be.
Okay, anything you want to talk about? Anything you're doing next week or looking forward to over the weekend? We got the Grand National ahead, if you like that. If you like your racing up near your neck of the woods, Kev.
Oh.
Liverpool beat
Oh
Everton
yeah,
1-0 in the derby.
struggled through. Got a
We
goal.
absolutely were all over them, but I was nervous for 90 minutes, I can promise you.
So you're all
But
over them, but you were nervous.
it was good to see 3 points in the bag, 12 points clear, only 8 games left,
I
and
mean, the only thing that matters is the final score line, right? At the end of the day, everything else is
a win's a
forgotten.
win.
It's
Yeah,
irrelevant.
exactly.
Three
Win's a
points.
win.
Win ugly. What about
Jar or
Formula
Tarkovsky
One?
should have been sent off without doubt. He
Yeah,
nearly broke
that was a
McAllister's
nasty,
leg.
nasty, nasty, nasty. There was a foul. What about Formula One? You got it's the Suzuka, it's the Japanese Grand Prix, isn't it, this weekend? It'd be interesting to see how McLaren get on. They got a 1-2 at the last race, so that will be an interesting one. And obviously Hamilton not doing very well. He won his sprint race, didn't he, his last time round? But yeah, very interesting to see what happens.
He
And
won the sprint
Suzuka's
race and
always
then got
very,
disqualified, didn't
exactly. So it'd be interesting to see, because like Suzuka's always quite a bit of a choppy race, is that there's a lot of offs.
he?
So very interesting. But anything
There's
else happening?
LIV Golf this weekend at Doral.
Texas, isn't it?
Trump Doral. No, it's in Florida,
Oh,
no?
is it?
Doral.
Texas
Where's
Open
the.
is underway at San Antonio, PGA Tour. Is
No,
that?
that's the PGA. This is the LIV.
Okay.
LIV Golf is at Trump Doral. So don't be
Right.
surprised if you see Trump in the golf in Doral at his course.
I
And then
just.
it's the Masters next weekend. Not this weekend, but the following weekend.
Do you guys ever just think, could we just send Trump back to the golf course for another few years and just bring Sleepy Joe back? Sleepy Joe slept a lot, but the market just kept going up. The economy was strong. I mean, egg prices and oil was expensive, and nobody really understood, anything about basic biology. But in terms of money, things were fantastic. Just bring Sleepy Joe back. I mean, what
Well,
I'm
I think
most
the
looking
Americans
forward
would
to.
disagree with you about the cost of living under
Oh,
Biden.
yeah.
I mean,
I
there
know
was
that.
a lot of anger, but I
Oh,
think
it's going to
that
get worse
what you need to do
now.
is have Trump inaugurated and have that same first 2 weeks of trading, because it went mad.
You know what we really need? Because Trump is talking, he's being serious. Take him at his word, right? Because he doesn't care about amendments to the Constitution or any of that crap. He wants a third term. Whether he'll be alive by then, I don't
Yes.
know. I want Trump v. Obama. Because that's going to be political,
Yeah, they've
bloody
already touted
Shakespeare.
Obama, haven't they, to come back again?
Political
But
Shakespeare.
he's gonna turn up in the White House with a basketball, like, I'm gonna beat you old man. It's gonna be super fun. And it's the you
Yeah.
wanna polarize America even more. That's gotta be the most polarizing debate ever.
He'll only be about 81 or 82 by that stage, will he?
Oh. The thing is, right, Trump, by all accounts, he should be dead by now. He lives off Diet Coke, he does no exercise, he has heart conditions and whatever else, but he's the kind of person who will live to 107 out of spite, right? So I think it'll be,
No,
yeah.
I think you're wrong. He exercises, but the only exercise he has is he plays golf, so he walks a fair bit.
Possibly.
But
But he, as you say, he eats a lot of Mackie D's, doesn't he? He's a
McDonald's
plant-based
and diet,
eating.
yeah.
Yeah, it'd be
It's all
interesting
genetics, though, isn't it, really?
whether Obama will actually come back. Funny enough, there was what kids were watching a movie. Was it something like Angry Dads or something like that? I can't remember. It was something like that with like Adam Sandler in, and Chris Rock was in it, and he shouted something like, "Ah!" Oh, and he was having a go. He's saying like he was screaming at the top of his voice, and he said something like, "I blame Obama for people not being scared of black guys," or something like that. I just thought, you wouldn't get away with saying that now, would they? I mean.
I've been working like flat out all day, like literally all day and all week actually. And I was just thinking, we're on day like 73 or whatever it is of 1,400 of Trump.
Yeah.
Like, we've barely got started. It's you got to
Has he
save
done,
some of your
Charles? Has he
energy.
done an executive order per day? Because he was up to 70 last time, so he must be at least one a day.
The thing is with the executive orders, right? You've got to understand, like you do probably do understand, but for people listening, last time he didn't have full control. This time he's got both of the houses as representatives and the Senate, even though they're going to rebel a couple, like they just did on the Canadian tariffs. He's
Yeah.
got both houses of the Senate. He pretty much controls the Supreme Court. He has the executive power, obviously, as president. And so those checks and balances which you have in the Constitution, they just don't really exist for him this time around. So if he writes an executive order and it gets rejected or, whatever, then he knows that he can just get it through the system anyway. So there's no point it being rejected by anybody. So he can pretty much, run it like an emperor until the global markets tell him off. And this is the thing. This is what happened to Liz Truss and what happened to, countless politicians who think the global markets don't matter. He's probably going to get smacked in the face at some point by something that breaks in the system. I don't know what that's going to be yet, but I suspect it will happen pretty soon.
Very good. Well, we'll leave you with that vision of someone smacking him in the face, and we'll say, have a great weekend, all. If you
Ah,
do like
dear.
what you've heard, please do subscribe and hit the bell icon for future notifications of further
No.
episodes, and have a great weekend, all.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.